As we think about quality of life, richness of life, the kinds of things that really make life matter and important, and even if we then push this past that and go think of things that make sense from an eternal standpoint, what are the things that make the biggest difference there?
If people are looking beyond simply the material, especially from a Christian perspective.
To focus past the obvious is to focus on relationships. And then we can kind of start to segment relationships out and say, you know, as Christians would say, starting with the relationship with the one who made us. And so what is your relationship with God like?
Welcome back to the Be Unbound podcast, where we discuss practical Christian living, how to build thriving communities, and how to be extraordinary at the ordinary. I'm your co-host, David Rethemeyer.
And I'm your co-host, Jonathan Brush.
And Jonathan, we are in an exciting time of year here at Unbound in that we are gearing up for a new year of Ascend. We have Apex that is going to be coming up in about a month here. So really excited for that. And you just recently got to hang out with a really special team of student leaders who are a big part of making our Ascend year happen every year. So tell us a little bit about what happened.
Yeah, we have a group of leaders that we call Ascend Team Leaders, and in Unbound, a little bit like the military, we like our acronyms, so we call them ATLs, and in fact, we call the team the ATAC team. But the ATAC team and the ATLs were here close to where we live, about 45 minutes away, for a retreat this past weekend. And in that retreat, they really are doing some training, they're doing some preparation, and I always think most exciting, they're really thinking deeply about the students they're going to serve. Now, just a little quick pull the curtain back on Unbound, and this is helpful for the illustration we're about to use here. These Ascend team leaders are a little bit like NCOs in the military. They're the real core of how we get things done in Unbound. They lead the teams. They're personally responsible for their student success, even though we don't adjust the standards at all. So it's an encouragement job. It's a help job. It's a kind of teach job. It's a hold responsible type of job. And all that means that in the course of a year, there's going to be some tough times and there's going to be some conflict. And in fact, one of our core things that we teach is that culture is king, but you don't build culture without conflict. And how you resolve conflict is how you build culture. And so it makes sense that we would want the ATLs to go through a little conflict or a little bit of pressure to see what kind of culture they build. So it has become tradition over the last several years to find something difficult for the ATLs to do when they're here. And that's sometimes creative, and sometimes the ATLs think slightly sadistic. But this time, I live on the Middle River, which is a relatively small river here in Virginia. And so the instructions for the ATLs this time is often pretty cryptic. And so they were dropped off at the river, and the instructions just said, get out at FOMR 18.8, go uphill till towards dinner. Now, for the listeners, FOMR is Friends of the Middle River. 18.8 happens to be where we live on the Middle River. And uphill would be our house where we were waiting, including David, with a fire going and hot dogs and marshmallows and macaroni and cheese and some other things ready to do. The twist was that it's a river, and they were given some boats, but they were given three seats, kayaks with three seats in them, so a double kayak and a single kayak, and there were 11 ATLs. And so the idea was, you know, would you go down the river? Would you go by land? Would you walk along the shore? Would you float? Would you make a raft? And these ATLs decided to basically wait it, which honestly, the river is at a level where it's not shallow enough to make wading easy and it's not deep enough to swim. And so it's kind of in the middle. And so, David, they exceeded our expectations in terms of hours taken by about double, didn't they?
I was going to say, yeah, I was on standby. Molly and I were just over at our family's house spending time with them. And we were just saying, hey, you know, Caitlin, just text us whenever the ATLs get done and we'll head over. And, you know, just kind of kept waiting and kept waiting and just didn't get a text. And finally, we were just like, I don't feel like Caitlin forgot. Is everything okay? Are they still alive out there? So we ended up just kind of coming over. And, you know, I think the food stores, we definitely made a good dent in them before they ended up finally arriving. But sure enough, after a while, they did end up actually getting back.
Right.
But my goodness.
Right as night was falling, several hours later than we thought, 11 very bedraggled and wet people crawled out of the river and came up ravenously hungry. And this, the story is interesting because at first blush, that doesn't look like a great way to create a fantastic experience for a set of team leaders, to make them do something that's pretty miserable, physically exhausting.
They look miserable.
and you know, so you go, why would you do that? But our experience has shown that that event winds up becoming pivotal to the culture of the ATLs, the Ascend Team Leaders, which ultimately has a massive impact on the culture in our program. In other words, when those leaders have an experience together that they have to work together to overcome, where some people are miserable and they have to help them through, where they have to compensate for weaknesses inside the group, and that ultimately when they succeed together and they have that feeling of accomplishment and even maybe a little bit of banding together over the stupid requirement that was given to them by leadership to wade this dumb river and why that's a stupid thing and why they're so hungry. When they have all those shared memories and shared experiences and shared process together, that forms a very cohesive, a very tight, and our experience, very positive culture. And when that culture is the culture of your leaders, then you can't help but spreading that to the rest of the organization. And so there's something there that's not obvious, but is very important, which brings us, David, to our question. So what is our question for today?
What a transition. Fantastic. It's almost like we planned these things, Jonathan, which the listeners
would not be
benefit.
Particularly true, but anyhow.
I was going to say, we're just like, our planning process is quite limited before
It's loose. It's loose, yeah.
Yes, exactly. We try to keep things authentic here on the Beyond Bound podcast. So the question that we are talking through is, how do you focus past the obvious? Which I think is an excellent question, and I think has layers to it, because you may initially hear that question and go, what does that actually mean? Because, and that then forces you to have to ask, okay, the meaning of the question is not that obvious, so you have to focus past the obvious. So, Jonathan, give us a little bit of a breakdown. Help us out a little bit here. What are we talking about?
So I think it's self-explanatory, and most people would instantly say, yeah, that makes sense, that, you know, in order to improve something, you need to focus on it. So, David, I'm curious, when in your life have you been told to focus than you can think of?
Quite a few times, many times by my mother when I was either sitting in school or in church.
I'm thinking that that's universal for everybody listening, that your mom probably told you, your parent told you to focus on blank. And it's almost always school or frequently church. Correct.
Yep. Those are probably the biggest ones.
So, and when they said that, you know, to focus on school, what was the desired result for you?
To learn whatever it was being communicated.
And so in your case, and school's a great example, how did you know, and how did your mother know if you did focus?
If my eyes were actually focused on the individual, the person talking, if my full attention was being paid towards them, if my posture was aligned that direction, and later, if I could actually tell her about what the person I was supposed to be listening to actually said.
And that last part is the part that I really want to focus on, no pun intended. And so your mom knew that you responded to her admonition to focus when you got results that showed that you understood the material, correct? I mean, when you passed the test, you were able to write the paper, whatever those things were. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's self-evident. We all know that. And yet that's interesting to state that in our context, because David, when we are measuring how our students do in Unbound, GPA doesn't really enter into the equation. Mm-hmm. And yet that's an easy to measure thing. And so we would actually say that the critical academic skill is not great grades. It's not fantastic test scores. We actually teach that and expound that the most important academic skill is to be able to quickly and effectively master complicated information, which is actually a fancy way of saying the most important academic skill is to learn. Mm-hmm. And so that changes things not so subtly. If your focus is on, I'm going to extract information from this and then be able to answer it in a way to help me pass the test, that's very much an answers-based paradigm. It is easily measured and it sort of ends at the test. If the focus, however, is that I'm going to absorb this information and I'm going to use it as a tool to help me to learn, so my focus is on learning how to learn better, That's very much a questions-based paradigm where you're asking the question, what does it mean to learn better? What does it mean to learn this material? What is it that I've learned about how to learn, and how am I going to apply these skills next? In other words, it's a little more open-ended, and mm-hmm. you're continuing to roll forward. And from our perspective, that rolling forward is kind of the definition of being prepared for life. There isn't a spot in life frequently where you can just pause and say, well, I passed the test and I'm good. Instead, there's new things to overcome. And so in that case, what most people focus on, and they say, you know, focus on this and get good results. But my argument is it's the results part that gets a little bit tricky. Is that true? Yes, absolutely. 100% that's true. And it's a good skill to know, and it's a good skill to have. And your mom was right to teach you that. But then when you get those results and they're measured, you know, what kinds of things, David, do we think about that are measured the most easily in our world? Certainly GPA for a student, mm-hmm. but past high school or past our final bit of learning.
I mean, easiest and most straightforward thing is monetary success. Like, how much money are you making? What's your job title? How far up the corporate ladder are you?
Yeah, so you can measure easily money, bank accounts, salary, raises, and you can measure prestige to some extent in terms of titles. And so this is where I think things get a little bit tricky. To be clear, I don't think it's wrong to pursue some of those things, and pursuing some of those things are necessary, so I'm not arguing against that. And it's important to focus to some extent to do those things. But then there's a pretty obvious trip up that happens here, which is if you focus primarily on money, what will you compromise to get there? And as Christians, we would say, yeah, we've got a lot of warnings about that. And yet, I think there's this constant temptation to focus on things like that because they're easy to measure. And so I think when we say to focus past the obvious in this case means, what does it mean and what does it take to focus past the easily measurable? And maybe the bigger question there would be, what are the things to measure? So David, I'll throw this back to you in terms of, mm-hmm. you know, as we think about quality of life, richness of life, the kinds of things that really make life matter important. And even if we then push this past that and go think of things that make sense from an eternal standpoint, what are the things that make the biggest difference there? You know, what are the things that should be measured in that arena? We know it's not money, clearly. I mean, mm-hmm. everybody would say, okay, even if you think money's important, there's an obvious answer there. It's not that. But what are the things there that we think are the most important to measure and to look at?
I mean, usually just the things that, you know, if people are looking beyond simply the material, especially from a Christian perspective, the main things are like, how much are they able to invest in their families? How much are they able to invest in their communities, whether that is like, you know, physical resources or time, you know, it just like in relationships in general, in their church community, how much are they able to spend time like doing the things that are going to be like, you know, doing work that will benefit their community and the people around them. Those are the things that come to my mind.
Well, I think that's right, first of all. But I think that that's interesting in that every single thing that you said there, really, the bottom line and the common theme is relationships. Mm-hmm. And so to focus past the obvious is to focus on relationships. And then we can kind of start to segment relationships out and say, you know, as Christians would say, starting with the relationship with the one who made us. And so what is your relationship with God like? Is it a relationship of worship? Is it a relationship of gratitude? Is it a relationship of understanding? Do you understand the proper context of that relationship and how you relate to God the Father and Jesus the Christ and the Holy Spirit and all those kinds of things? And then how does that mean in terms of how it flows out to everything else? I had an interesting conversation recently with somebody, and we were talking about people and relating to people and all those kinds of things. And in it, as we had the conversation, and this was a little bit aside of the conversation, but I was thinking about it as I was driving away from this particular meeting, there is a interesting cycle in people's lives. They start out focusing on good grades, achievement, training, and there's easy things to measure there. And then they can move into the middle of their life, and often people are focused on status and focused on money, and there's a necessity for that. We're not saying that that should be totally disregarded. And then in the culture that we live in, it's not uncommon, although it's not necessarily easy, but it's not uncommon for people to reach a point where you don't have to focus on money. In other words, the retirement kicks in, right? You've achieved some level of financial sustainability. That means you don't focus on money. And when that happens, people say, oh, great, it's time to retire. Well, when they retire, then the focus on status also dissipates a good bit because you no longer have a title and you're no longer looking to, you're looking to conserve money. You're not looking to earn money. And so the measurement changes a little bit there. And then I watch as somebody who stays, who's involved with the local church and has been there for a long time. I watch this kind of arc, you know, people come up and they kind of peak there and then they step out of that. And then there's this sometimes rapid, but sometimes slow, but always this descent where all the things that are easy to measure evaporate. But we're not measuring money anymore because there's not really any opportunity to grow that money. But we're not measuring status anymore because we stepped out of our executive position or we stepped out of our whatever position when we retired. And then we're not measuring, you know, we've got a couple of community jobs, but after a little bit of time, you know, it's time to pass the torch for the Roartons. And, you know, in our society, there's less and less of those community organizations. And all of a sudden you find people that are stripped of all those things and they find themselves really isolated, really alone, and really confused because they understand the result of where they are, but they don't understand how they got there. And I would argue that the start of that, the heart of that, was way back at the very beginning, an incorrect focus. And that's not an indictment, that's more of a sympathy, that a distraction, not an accidental distraction, I think a distraction placed by the enemy to focus on things that are easy to measure but aren't lasting. And I feel like there's a lot of scriptural admonition to us to pay attention and to focus past the things that are easy to measure and to focus on lasting things. And, you know, there's lots of verses, build up your treasures in heaven. Well, what does that mean? I think it's to focus on those things that transcend those easy to measure things that wind up being important, not only at the end of your life, but throughout your life, to the point that we might have a variation of things we say in Unbound, time and tasks only matter in the context of relationships. We might say prestige and earnings only matter in the context of relationships, both immediately and long-term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the verse that immediately comes to my mind is, set your mind on things above. And I think, especially when I first learned that verse when I was younger, I just kind of thought, well, does that mean that I just constantly have to just be thinking about God all the time? Because that sounds hard and that sounds like that's not that doable. And it's like, okay, yes, I think it would be beneficial for us to be thinking about God more throughout our day. That's true. Also, I think the things above can, like, the definition of that, like, yes, God is above, but I think that the definition that's being talked about of things above in that scripture isn't just God himself. It's talking about everything that will be eternal, the things that are above earth that are not going to fade away with time, as everything in this world will. And so then we ask ourselves the question, well, what are those things? And really the only true answers to that are the kingdom of God and the people who are going to be making up that kingdom and the immortal souls that are going to be a part of that. And so that, I think, helps us a lot with kind of narrowing down the kind of deeper focus that we should seek to have. And there's a lot of different avenues that takes place through. And I think this has some really practical outworkings too. You know, we were talking a little bit at the start of this about, just career development and just how, you know, that can end up changing when you're in your job. So, Jonathan, especially at the start of your career, you were the director of an admissions department for a college. And so you worked with a lot of admissions counselors. You had quite a few different counselors come in who are working to try to enroll students, right? And so what was the primary objective that they had for, for their job, for their success in their role?
So that's a great question. So our job was to enroll a certain amount of students, but the mm-hmm. primary objective was to enroll the right students Because ultimately, even from a business sense, if you enroll the wrong students, it just creates a hole you have to do next year. And if you enroll the right students, it's, you know, in admissions, they say it's easier to retain than it is to recruit. In other words, just from a sheer financial standpoint, if you retain a student, it's much cheaper than to go and recruit a new student.
Right. So in your opinion, in that role that you were playing, would you have preferred to keep someone on who was bringing in, say, you know, just these numbers, 50% more students overall, or students that were 50% higher in quality and a better match for the school?
Oh, I can actually argue this from a different organization I worked for, where there was a recruiter that was just killing it numbers wise initially and was outperforming everybody else. But the students that he brought in often had no concept of what the program was, how it worked. And so sometimes disenroll within weeks of starting. And so there's like these big numbers that would come in, and then there was these big numbers that went out. But what was interesting, David, over time was that the territory for this person yielded less and less because he was going back to places and they said, yeah, I tried that and it didn't work because it was misrepresented. Right. Mm. And so counselors in other areas that were working in a different way, had smaller numbers initially, but those numbers grew year over year as they went back and people said, oh yeah, you know, but that involved rejecting some folks or not recruiting some folks because they weren't good matches for the program.
Yeah. Yeah. So the reason that example comes to mind, is that just the surface level thing that you would think of for what an admission counselor should focus on is just getting people to enroll in the program. But when they actually look past the obvious, the much more important thing is to, for the admissions counselors, is to understand the students that they are trying to enroll, to understand the school and the program that they're trying to enroll them in. And that requires a lot of relational skill. And that's something that, you know, I think our admissions team here at Unbound does extremely well, is that they try very intentionally to, not only when they are enrolling students, but well after they have enrolled, to keep up a relationship with the students, to understand where they're at, how they can help, you know, with any sort of challenges they might be facing as they're in the programs. And there's a huge focus on the relationship, because that is the thing that's past the obvious that is the real metric for success in that role.
Well, as kind of to sort of drive this home and to kind of to come to conclusion, is how to focus past the obvious. I think the first point there is to know that the obvious isn't the end. And so to know that there's going to be things to measure that are easier to measure up front, and those are almost always not the things that are important to focus on. And I think we could actually translate this really well by just stating that in your everyday life, we mentioned, you know, it's not bad to seek a raise. It's not bad to seek a better position. We're not condemning those things, but it is a measure of focus. And there's a fairly simple formula here, which is just to say, let's start with this. What should you be focused on? Well, you should be focused on the relationship with the one who made you. You should be focused on your relationship with God. And out of that focus on your relationship with God comes a prioritization. Then you should be focused on taking care of the people that are closest to you. And so those relationships are the folks that you're responsible for. So as a family, you know, be your spouse first and your children next. As if you don't have an immediate family, it's honoring your parents, taking care of your siblings. If it's in terms of, you know, the friends that you work with most closely. And then, you know, even as you come down with that, it's the people that you spend the most time with. And often that means people in your church, people in your work, your neighbors, those kinds of things. There's a proximity principle here. We're not God, so we are not able to relate to everybody. We have to relate to the people that are in our spheres. And then I find that that's helpful, because if you focus there, then a couple things become obvious. If I'm to, you know, serve other people, I need to create value. If I'm going to take care of my family, I have to earn a certain salary. If I'm going to contribute to my church, I'm going to have to build skills that I can use to serve the church whatever way they want, whatever the way they need. All those things then become important, but they become important in the context of focusing on that which is most essential. They become important in the context of serving Christ. They become important in the context of taking care of those relationships that are close to me in the name of Christ. And then, you know, flowing down from that, there are practical considerations in terms of the skills that I need to build, of the money that I need to earn, of the things I need to achieve, even perhaps of the status that I need to gain in order to do those things. But they then make more sense, and I think make healthy sense, in the context of focusing on the right things. So that's what I mean to how do you focus past the obvious? It's to kind of initially reject focusing on that which is easiest to measure. That's going to be the easy, that's the low-hanging fruit. And instead, focus past that on the things that are bigger, the things that are eternal, literally. And then work your way back out to the point where you're going to have to focus on those things that you measure, but you can now do that in the right context and with the proper understanding.
Yeah. Yeah. And to bring in even more practical examples to this, like this is something that, you know, goes beyond just the, you know, just in terms of work and understanding, you know, that you shouldn't just focus on your primary metric for whatever your job is requiring of you. You know, Jonathan, you have worked in multiple businesses where you have been in charge of hiring people. When you think about the traits that people demonstrate when it comes to the people who, you know, there's, I find that a lot of the times when I talk to business owners, there's two different kind of groups of employees that they have. There's the group that is just kind of fine and, you know, does the bare minimum, like they get by, they are, their performance is satisfactory, and that's like the majority of people. And then there's the, you know, there's kind of the superstars, the people who go above and beyond, the people that, you know, the bosses are really excited to have them all come in on their shift or come in on that. And so I think Jonathan, I think to kind of tie this in here, what do you feel like is the common thread that you see in the focus of those superstars in the organizations that you've worked with?
Well, literally this morning I was in at Valley Pike and the manager who was on duty came to me and said, you need to talk to the coffee shop crew on the way out. The crew last night left the back porch a disaster area. So the back porch is closed in and where guests can sit. And their job is to clean that up. And it's not cleaned up. The tables aren't wiped. There's food in the floor. There's garbage cans overflowing. Just a pretty egregious, you know, having not done their job. The coffee shop's not in charge of the back porch. They said, but they can see it because there's a window from the coffee shop onto the back porch. And she said, the coffee shop folks, as soon as they had a break this morning, hustled their tail out to the back porch and just worked on through and cleaned it. They scrubbed the floors, they scrubbed the tables, they picked up the trash, they did all those things. It's not their job, but they did it. And I think for them, the focus is not on what's my job. I'm just going to put my hours in and get my pay. The focus was on, I'm part of a bigger organization and we don't let guests eat in a disaster area like this. And we don't let the building fall to this level of disrepair. And as a pride, my focus is on something bigger, focus on the organization, on the people that we serve. There's that relationship part, the people that we work for, and on the responsibility that, you know, if I see a problem, it's my problem. And so without being asked, they ran out there and solved that. And, that kind of looking through the obvious, what was easy to measure was I'm doing coffee shop and I've got this little space taken care of. And what was not so obvious was, you know, if the back porch is a mess, that reflects on all of us and we're not going to stand for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think the practical takeaway that we can encourage just about anyone with this is that looking past the obvious and just finding the things that matter beyond that. And I think the biggest way to do that is to just look at what you are a part of that is beyond just the metrics that you as an individual are set up with. Yeah, that's the, you know, Jonathan just talked about through a couple of great examples for that in the workplace. But then I think that applies in your family. I think that applies in your church, in your community, and just about any sort of group where you might be taking part in. The looking at the larger picture of what you're involved in and how you can make a difference in advancing that, the goals of the group that you're a part of, and ultimately taking care of the people who are around you, who are both within that organization and who are being served by that organization. I think looking for the ways that you can do that is one of the best changes that you can make when it comes to looking for what you can focus on.
And just remember to look past the obvious to those things that are more important, those things that are eternal, and ultimately those things that are going to end up being relationships.
Hi, my name is Patterson and I live right outside Denver, Colorado. I just finished my foundations year at Ascend, and I'm headed into my challenge year this fall. So excited. As I spent the summer just reflecting on all the things I've learned and just getting a chance to really let what happened throughout the foundations year sink in, I just noticed a lot of really cool things about my life that had just shifted after the things that I learned. So one of the biggest things is, obviously, based off the name, I have just had such a solid foundation laid out for me, especially when it comes to work and what I do with work and how I view work. Like, work is worship, and it is such a cool thing to be able to do something, no matter what it is, no matter how small it is. I know that with the right heart and the right understanding of how we were created, we were worshiping Christ. And that's just probably one of my biggest takeaways. And another thing that has, like, impacted my foundation for just stepping into this adult life and the next season of life is just my view on people and my view on myself. One of the things that they really present very heavily in the foundations year is us as humans, we carry the imago Dei, which is the image of Christ. And that impacts how we view ourselves, how we view our work, how we view seeking the Lord, but also affects on how we view other people. And that is just such a huge thing that I have seen impact my life, impact my job, how I pour into people, just knowing that no matter what, people carry the image of Christ, and that gives them infinite value and infinite worth. And as humans, like, we're called to be in relation with other people. And that's probably my biggest takeaway, is knowing that work is worship, and pursuing people and knowing their identity is in the image of Christ. It affects everything you do. It affects how you go to your job, the attitude you have to your job, how hard you work. Like, I've noticed such a difference. I've had so many jobs throughout this past year, and I've seen such a difference in each and every one of them because I view it as worship, and that has just shaped my life. I hope you consider taking this in. It's definitely worth it.
Well, book reviews. This is like an agonizing question, David. You ask somebody who reads a lot to review their most recent book or a book that they like. And, you know, I'm back and forth. And I was sharing with David that I normally am in the middle of 4 or 5 books. And recently I haven't been reading quite as much. And so all of those things kind of came together. But David reviewed a fictional series when he did his book review. And I thought I would stick with that theme. There is only one major series that I've ever been tempted to read more than once. And that is Patrick O'Brien's Aubrey and Stephen series. It has various different names, but it is an 18th century naval series. It starts with Master and Commander. There's a movie that Russell Crowe was in that has made it somewhat famous. The movie never quite got as big.
I thought I heard of that.
Yeah, the movie never got as big as everybody thought it was. There was no sequel, which I think is kind of a discouraging because it was a good film. But the film, as most things do, pales in comparison to the series. The series is 18 books, I believe. And so to read 18 books once is a dedication. I think I've read them 3 times. And I can't think of any other series of that length, more than 3, that I have read more than once. And I think my best endorsement would be that they have been rewarding every time that there's been new things. And so there's a couple reasons for that. First, they're written in the language of the period, which is English, but it is kind of older English. And I found, David, that it took me 3 or 4 chapters to warm my brain up to be able to sort of slip into that, you know, where you're not reading so much as experiencing it, like it's flowing into your mind.
Okay, when you say Old English, are you talking like, is this like Old King James, like Bible type of language?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's not quite like that. It's just more stilted and formal than, say, a popular writer would write. And so it's not these and thous, but the dialogue is very much in the vein of 18th century people. And the vocabulary is the same. And so you have to work at it. In other words, you know, a good writer like Brandon Sanderson, you know, 4 lines in, you stop reading and it's just flowing into your mind. You know, the story is just coming in. In Patrick O'Brien's case, it takes me a couple chapters to warm up. But then you're really immersed because of the language. There's also, you know, sometimes people say the difference between like a story and a novel is the unnecessary detail, right? You know, like it's kind of the extra layers. And O'Brien definitely does that. It's, you know, some naval fiction is just a constant thunder of guns and swinging of cutlasses. But in reality, that's not the way it played out. You know, most folks in that time period, as in most people, would have periods of combat interspersed with long periods of sort of ship routine. And what's different about O'Brien's story is that he spends a lot of time in the long periods of ship routine. And so there's a depth to the characters that's really pretty extraordinary. There's also a richness of detail. And O'Brien does these interesting things where almost every encounter in his, every location, the type of ship, sometimes the specific ship, and almost every encounter in the entire series is based on historical fact. He obviously places his characters in those situations, but they're things that actually happened. And even the actions themselves are almost always based on real actions that took place. If his characters are involved in a larger battle, the battle works exactly the way the battle did in history. And the situation the characters are in were probably situations actual people were in, but then he's put his characters in those places. So the result is this very interesting read that is entertaining from a fictional standpoint, but is also incredibly revealing from a historical standpoint. You really get a feel for that time period. And then Patrick O'Brien does what good authors do, is very revealing from a human standpoint. These are people with sin, with real problems. They are heroic, but not heroic. They're heroic like David is heroic, not heroic like Superman is heroic. Mm-hmm. In other words, they're fallen people still, and their fallenness and their sin are never far away. And yet you can see them for being human and made in the image of God at the same time. As far as I know, Patrick O'Brien is not a Christian. I don't know his faith standpoint. I shouldn't argue that. They certainly are not Christian novels, but the time period they were written in is the time period when that kind of religion would have been standard. And so one of the characters is very much a Christian because that's what everybody is. And the other is really struggling with Darwin's ideas and science and all those kinds of things. And so the interplay between those two are also really fascinating from some of the theological background. So fascinating read.
Yeah, very interesting. Does it follow the same characters throughout all 18 of the books?
It does, and they age. Wow. They start out quite young, and they end up quite old. There's an actual timeline that's real, and so their families, you know, their marriages, the struggles in their marriages, their children, all of those are they age with the series, and so there's no weird time gap here. And it follows a historical period, so the things that they do take place at the same years that those things actually happen.
Well, that's really cool. And, you know, I was talking about, Brandon Sanderson's books being an investment, but, even he doesn't have, all of his books don't reference the exact same characters. And so I think that sounds really cool. And I would even argue that that series sounds like even more of an investment, but it sounds like it could be even more worth it because you're following the same characters. That sounds cool.
I got them all, David. You want to borrow them? Come on over and grab them.
I might do that. Well, welcome back to another student feature. We are continuing our series with the Unbound Student Cabinet, which is the student leadership team that is responsible for planning APEX, Unbound's largest event every year. And today I am joined by Braden, who's another member of the cabinet. So, Braden, thanks for joining me here.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
So tell us a little bit about what you are doing for the cabinet this year.
Yeah, of course. So I'm on several different teams. So I was on the content team. I'm kind of responsible for finding all the speakers, connecting with them, getting them to APEX, and kind of developing our theme and vision for APEX. And then I've been on a lot of the sub-teams, kind of working on different activities. So I've been working on our team challenges. We're going to have one of those every day that Ascend teams and APEX teams are going to complete together. I've been working on our Mission Impossible team activity, which is going to be a dramatic, exciting competition one evening. All kinds of fun things, working on logistics, making sure everyone gets there on time, all the fun stuff. So.
Sounds like a little bit of everything. That's really cool. Yeah. So tell me just specifically, what do you feel like have been the biggest things for you personally that you have learned, either just skills wise that you didn't have as much before this, or just about yourself and how you work in a team through your experience on cabinet?
Yeah. Definitely one of the biggest things I've learned is just working with the team. There's seven of us on cabinet. It's an amazing team. So just like getting to work with all of them, like the teamwork aspect, I guess, has been the biggest part. So many skills, just like organization. I have learned that I am definitely more of like a visionary. Like I love coming up with ideas, but I don't always know how to make those ideas come to reality. So I have enjoyed just getting to brainstorm and come up with a bunch of ideas, and everyone else in the cabinet can kind of take those ideas and, you know, help me run with them and be like, okay, that's not going to work, but this other idea we can kind of modify and run with that. So that's been awesome. Dealt with a lot of spreadsheets. That's been a stretching experience for me. Yeah, honestly, so many skills.
That's really cool. And I love that you pointed out that being an ideas person means that you need other people on your team to kind of bounce those ideas off of you and to kind of figure out what's possible and what's not. And as somebody who is more of an executor, that's helpful when you have somebody who can generate a lot of ideas for you, but is willing to graciously, you know, take your feedback from that. So that's cool that you guys have found that balance. So, yeah, well, last question as we're kind of wrapping up here. What are you personally most excited for when it comes to Apex?
I am most excited. Can I say two things? Is that acceptable?
You know, I wouldn't let just anybody get away with it, but Brayden, I'll let you have two.
Okay, there we go. I am most excited about the Impossible mission. That's going to be the first evening activity. I talked about that a little bit. It's going to be exciting. There's going to be running. There's going to be tackling. There's going to be code solving. It's going to be epic. That's like the most hype challenge that I'm excited about. And then I would say the second thing is just the content overall. We've worked really hard on developing our theme and our vision for Apex, and contacting speakers that we think work with our theme and all of that. So I'm just super excited to hear all the speakers, see how all of that comes to life, and hopefully see the impact that it makes on all the students and myself.
Well, that's really cool. I'm definitely excited for the speaker lineup. And the more you have talked about it, the more that I am excited for this Impossible mission. The main question that I have on that, though, is it actually impossible? Is there even a possibility that the teams will be able to complete it?
I guess we'll see. You never know. I personally believe in the teams. I think that they can do the Impossible mission and make it possible. But I guess we'll see at Apex. So,
I suppose we will. Well, thank you for joining me, Brayden. And I am very excited to see what the Impossible mission and all the rest of the things that you guys have in store for Apex will be.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, David.
Well, once again, we appreciate you joining us for the Be Unbound podcast. We hope that this was helpful in terms of what you focus on, and maybe we can leave you with one last challenge as we go out today to just look a little through things this week. David, my dad's a hunter, and when he started taking me out into the outdoors and doing things, he would always say, if you just look in front of you, you'll just focus on the stuff that's very close. But in the eastern woodlands, you have to often squat down to get below some of the understory, and you have to focus past the initial brush. And it's when you focus past the initial things right in front of you is that you start to see the things beyond. You see that deer standing over there. You see the hawk in the tree over here. You see the rabbit underneath the bush. Maybe you see that coyote sort of sliding away, or the fox over here. And it's the focus past what's immediately present. We would challenge you listeners as you go through the rest of this week to maybe focus past what's immediately in front, what's easy to measure, and to think from a bigger, a deeper, a more relational, and a more eternal perspective.
Well, Jonathan, I have to ask this. So what you're saying, Mr. Brush, is that you have to look past the brush.
Yeah, that's always a good idea. You might want to see for the next brush beyond it, in our case. Exactly. And maybe anybody that's close to me should know that that would be a really good piece of advice, is to typically focus past the brush and whatever crazy thing he's saying at the moment. Until we see you next time, please check us out at beunbound.us if you want more information about Be Unbound. We mentioned Valley Pike, so if you're traveling the wonderful Interstate of 81, come off exit 235 and come down and visit us. And until next time, Be Unbound.